It is March, and that means it's time for another Nashville Reads. Does it mean that's time for another Nashville Reads? I don't know. This is only the second Nashville Read, so I don't know when they happen. But what I do know is this is the Popmatic Podcast, and I'm Brian.
I'm Crystal.
Amanda's here, too.
And I'm Mike.
Mike, this is your first time on the podcast. Woo-hoo! Okay, top 15 European interwar novelists. Go. I'll make it easy. No Polish authors, okay? Go.
You're so helpful.
Okay, easier.
Which war?
Okay, easier. Interwar, man. Between World War I and World War II.
Ooh, tricky.
Okay, I'll make an easier one. Okay, Mike, what do you do?
I'll clear the Western Front.
Oh, not bad. What do you do here at the library?
I'm a cataloger.
All right. Explain to non-library.
Fine. basically, I assign books to where they need to go. I give them a home.
That's
in number
true.
Form.
That's true. All right.
That's great. I give them a home in number form. I like that.
Yeah. Does that mean you're like a book accountant? You're more like a
book real estate agent.
I was going to say book scientist.
Ooh, yeah.
I dig it. Movies and music, too.
Yeah. And CD audios and
cool.
Playaways and board games. And I've done alarm clocks, too.
That's awesome.
I've never checked out an alarm clock.
I haven't either. But my old library had garden tools as well.
I'm pushing for vinyl records, Popmatic Podcast listeners. I want the library to circulate vinyl records again.
They got rid of those years ago. You know, they're never coming back.
13 years
exactly.
Ago.
We just got rid of VHS.
And we're going to bring vinyl back. It's going to be great.
Next is 8-tracks.
So
groovy.
Our dedicated listeners might notice that Bill isn't here. And so Mike's been kind enough to fill in. And that's awesome.
We needed somebody to sing bass.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, absolutely.
Also, Clint is here since I'm getting left behind.
I was going to say, Clint is here, and Clint actually gave himself a mic today, which is cool. Have you been doing that?
I've been giving myself a mic every one that we've ever done.
Okay, so awesome.
Way to pay attention there.
Hey, I'm being the executive producer up here, man. I have important stuff to do, like tell people when to say their name.
I can do it.
So anyway, it is Nashville Reads, and the book this time is Life of Pi. We're going to talk about the book and maybe the movie and other book-to-movie adaptations. There will be spoilers, so...
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, so if you just don't want to read the book, you can just listen to this podcast, right? Or if you don't want spoilers, I'll put a little note in the show notes when to skip past to hear all the other great stuff.
It'll be like every other second.
All the other great stuff that we're going to
But what do I
talk
do
about.
Now?
What? You forced to hear it even though you don't want to?
Well, no, let me go.
Here's the thing with spoilers on this book. You find out that he survives in the very, in the introduction. So it's not really a spoiler. But we'll get to that. First... What's happening in Nashville at the library in March?
Lots of fun stuff. Nashville Opera presents Little Red's Most Unusual Day, Saturday, March 9th at 10:30 in the auditorium. That's in the main library on the first floor. And the description is, this family-friendly production features a comedy of errors and a cast that includes a love-struck forest ranger Dudley, Little Red, her mom, her granny, and, of course, the Big Bad Wolf. Also features music from operas by Offenbach and Rossini.
So also happening is an introduction to freelance writing with Randy Rutter. This class is totally free. That's at the main library, March 9th, 9:30 to 1:30. So I guess you can't go to both, can you?
Oh, no, you'd miss one or the other.
Right.
No.
He'll cover the basis of freelance writing, including... strong query letters, researching and targeting the appropriate publications for your work, researching stories, conducting interviews, drafting stories, and tax tips if you're an independent author. I've helped Randy do this workshop before. He's good. It's really informative, and it's free. Come on down.
All right, so Movies at Maine, again in March, Saturday, March 9th.
It's a big
and
day.
It is a big day. And we are pleased to feature Who is Killing the Great Chefs of Europe? This stars George Siegel as a fast food entrepreneur. He's trying to save his chef ex-wife, played by Jacqueline Bisset, before she becomes the next victim of a chef's only serial killer. Robert Morley steals the show as Maximilian Vanderveer, a food critic armed with a vicious wit. And Bill would be very upset with me if I didn't remind you all to check out his Legends of Film podcast interview with the film's director, Ted Kotcheff.
If you notice, that's all on the same day. So, like, you could come with your family and have, like, a whole day of, like, awesome free stuff to do at the library on Saturday.
And check out a book, too, while you're here.
Well, okay, so, for instance, let's say Dad goes to the freelance writing workshop, you know? At the end of the day, he might have to read a book, you know, if you're still doing something else. That's okay.
He could read a book on freelance writing.
He could.
Indeed.
So what else you got? Here's Mike's debut at pitching a library event.
Ooh, it's part of the community cinema. We have Wonder Women, the untold story of American superheroines, Saturday, March 16th at 3 p.m. in the auditorium in the main library's first floor.
What's that about?
Superheroines.
I totally set you up. That was the only one that didn't have a description. I was like, oh, just give it. See what he does. So.
Yeah. Multiple Wonder Women.
You know what? Community cinema is one of our best programs. We get so many people that I'm like, it doesn't need a big pitch, does it? Am I being jerky? I don't know. Does it need a big pitch?
It needs a big pitch.
It needs a big pitch? Mm-hmm. Superheroines, come on down, man.
Fly your invisible plane.
Come in costume.
There you go.
Kick butt.
Ooh,
chicks.
Yeah,
little cosplay.
Yeah, hey,
very
I'm cool. going to be Hillary
Comic-Con.
Clinton. I'll have this power pantsuit on. And
You get the bob cut.
Yeah, I don't know. Right?
You already dress like Hillary Clinton. That wouldn't be.
I don't know what that means. She wears like a black band collared dress shirt every day.
Anyway. That's what you wear every day.
Chunky heels.
All right. So, last but not least, Conversations at MPL, Clearly Invisible Racial Passing and Cultural Identity. Join us for a special author talk with Marcia Dawkins, PhD. For a new conversation on race and identity, that is Saturday, March 30th, 1 to 3 p.m. in the Conference Center. What is passing? Dr. Dawkins explores the implications and meaning of passing in her new book, Clearly Invisible Racial Passing and the Color of Cultural Identity. And I may be talking out my librarian hole, but I believe we wanted Dr. Dr. Dawkins to come to be like our big headliner for African American History Month. But sometimes you want to get awesome people. You know, a lot of people want them to come and do things, so you just got to fudge the dates a little bit. That being said, Black History is Nashville History. It's an awesome author to come any time of the year. So she's going to be here March 30th talking about her book, Clearly Invisible Racial Passing. That's an awesome program. So if you have kids at home and you want to explain to them what the librarian hole is, it's at the top of the librarian's head, right? Uh-huh. And librarians have so much knowledge that sometimes, you know, it has to be released like a tea kettle. You know, you'll hear a librarian babbling often about science fiction TV shows, and it's like, oh, look, there's steam coming out of the librarian hole.
But in a quiet whisper.
Not me.
Don't think you need anymore.
Not me. I can remember I started at the library. My coworkers were like, bring it down. Bring it down. Anyway. Is that all we got for events?
That's all I got.
No, there are like hundreds of events happening at the library in March. We are main library centric, and I apologize to all the patrons that go to branches, all my coworkers at branches. You know, y'all do good work and good programs. Send me an email if you want me to pitch a program on the podcast. I will. Time Warp. We're recording in the future. So you're listening to this on or after March 4th, but Jan Martel was here on March 2nd, and it was great.
He's so smart.
Yes.
Changed my life.
Yes. Okay. But we're going to talk about Life of Pi now. So, Life of Pi is a novel about Pasin Patel, Pi for short, a teenage boy whose family owns a zoo in India during the 1970s. Though his family is not religious, he embraces all three religions in his community, Hinduism, Islam, and Christianity. This is an anomaly, to say the least, Before this can be, like, sorted out, his family decides to sell the zoo and move to Canada. But what's left of the zoo is on this big cargo ship and his family, and it sinks. He ends up in a lifeboat with Richard Parker, who, oh, yeah, happens to be a Bengal tiger. And the rest of the book is about how they survive. So, first of all, who read the book?
Me. I did.
Okay, Amanda, you put your hand up first. You have to vocalize. Okay. And Mike, you didn't read the book?
Nope.
You're fired. Okay.
I figured I would because I like Prometheus.
You know, if Bill was here, Bill would say, I didn't read the book, but I saw the movie. So it's all right. So I read the book, too. And Crystal and I saw the movie, right? Did you see the movie? Okay.
Clint, of course not.
Clint took a said no. The publisher paid for me and Crystal to go see the movie. No.
Right.
No.
Joke.
The publisher, I think, did pay for a lot of us to have a lot of copies of this book this time around, and that's awesome, actually. So, but first, I just wanted to throw out some things here. So do you agree that with Pi's opinion that the zoo is more like a suburb than a jail for animals? Because he talks a lot about the zoos at the beginning of the book.
Interesting question. That part of the book really just drug me down, because I'm such an animal lover, and I've always felt that animals should not be in zoos. But perhaps the philosophy in there is accurate. I mean, I'd have to talk to a biologist or a zoologist about that. But, you know, even the tiger that was at the Nashville Zoo, I don't know if he's still there, but I always got so depressed when I saw him because he's just walking around in this one circle and he looks very forlorn. And
I think we'd all like to think that they were like the suburbs as opposed to, what was our other choice, of prison?
He said the zoo is more like a suburb than a jail.
Mm. I mean, I think we'd like to think that. I'm not sure that it's always true.
I feel like Martel starts just like setting up this metaphor for like fish out of water, because that's the a thing that goes the whole way through. Like he's in India, but it's French India. It's not British India, right? And his family is not religious, but he becomes super religious. And then he's on a boat with the tigers, all this like, you know, fish out of water. So like things surviving and doing okay, even though they're not where they're supposed to be or out of place. I felt that that whole first part is just continuing all those metaphors. As to whether he's right about that, I don't know. He also says, too, that the zoos are out of fashion, just like religion.
Right.
So I'm one of those people that I probably don't like religion or zoos in general. So, you know.
This is a great book for you.
This is a great book for you. So, I don't know if his arguments are good or bad. I'm kind of just neutral towards them. But that was interesting that he sets that up.
It's definitely
at the
food
beginning.
For thought. I mean, I don't know that we ever come to an agreement on that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess maybe we won't come to an agreement. Probably not. So then I was just going to ask, what role does religion play in the book? Because I kind of felt it was a very religious book.
That's funny, though, because I mean, it's been a while since I've read it, because I read it in probably 2004 or 2005. I don't remember it being. I mean, I remember that aspect of it being there, but I don't remember it being quite as big of a deal.
I don't think it's about religion so much as just all about faith. I mean, I got the feeling it's kind of down on organized religion anyway, but that you should have faith. Don't ask me to expand on that.
I was
going to
say, in what? But
Well, okay.
I mean, I don't want to jump right into one, like, nitpick one scene, but the all right, well, I'll be quiet now until we may get to further in Richard Parker and Pi's journey together on the boat.
Well, I think it's all about religion. Well, I think it has two aspects. There's like sort of the adventure survival aspect, and then there's the religious aspect. And I think the way that he embraces all three religions at once, I think this is all about religion. And then he has, you know, when he's on the boat, he has a series of religious experiences, and I think there's a lot of really specific individual metaphors that relate to each of the three religions that he talks about when he's on the boat. And I think he's okay with organized religion, too, because he talks about how ritual is important and it matters, and he has a prayer rug, and he does all the rituals and all the religions that he's partaking in before he gets on the boat. But that's just the way I read it.
Right, right.
So, but what do you think about this idea that someone can participate in the three religions at once? I mean, does that make sense, or is he just like a kid?
Well, to me, that illustrated the point of maybe that organized religion for character in the book is something that maybe he's more interested in faith, and he sees these, maybe there are good elements in each of those religions, and he wants to take the best of all of those and kind of just grow in his faith. And that's what was a comfort to him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that historically we've had a great success at those three religions living side by side in the world, and I'm not sure that to be a true follower of any one you could be able to, you know, take aspects of
right
the other ones. But I do think he was definitely searching for a higher meaning than just here and now. I mean, I think he found it through ritual and just kind of what a lot of time he spent in his head when he was on the lifeboat, because, you know, his TV didn't quite reach that long to plug in at shore. But
do you all remember the quote? It really stuck out to me that I think he was talking about the Canadian woman, Pi, that he met and was later kind of his adoptive mother. And when she first heard of the Hare Krishnas, she thought they were hairless Christians. And so the quote, and I wrote it down, Hindus in their capacity for love are indeed hairless Christians, just as Muslims in the way they see God in everything are bearded Hindus, and Christians in their devotion to God are hat-wearing Muslims. So to me that just means, you know, faith is good and we should all coexist and
wear hats.
And wear hats. And grow beards.
I just, for me, it just made sense that he could hold all these religions in his head at once. And it seems like he actually did practice all three religions. And then he even talks about, too, his other teacher was actually, too, the Marxist, one of his teachers at school who he would talk to at the zoo. And how the first time he talked to him and, you know, he talked about how, you know, he didn't believe in God at all. You know, it was like a moment.
Teacher didn't believe in God, or Pi didn't believe in God?
The teacher didn't believe in God.
The atheist.
Okay. Yeah. There was like a communist teacher at the school, and one day they got to chatting at the zoo. So he talked about how that taught him a lot, too. I don't know, that just, I'm okay with that. I'm like, my mind is right. Hydra-headed. So at the end, which version of the story do you prefer? The version with the animals, or the version with the non-animals, and where the animals were the people on the lifeboat? Because I guess, spoiler alert, big, this is the serious big spoiler alert. He finally reaches the shore in Mexico. He tells the insurance agents the story about how he survived with these animals on this boat, and then eventually it was just down to him and the tiger, and then he finds this big floating island of carnivorous plants. They're like, this is bull, you know? Listen, kid, you got to tell us the real thing. So he tells another version of the story where the animals are actually people from the boat, including his mother, and they all sort of turn on each other, and it's brutal and horrible. And you find out that, you know, Richard Parker the tiger might just been a metaphor for his own killer instinct to survive on the boat. And he says to the insurance people, is this okay? And they're like, yeah, this is pretty good. He's like, will you admit that it makes no difference? And like, we admit that it makes no difference which story. So which version of the story do you like better?
I just remember being really perturbed when he pulled that. I mean, because, like, because you're reading the whole first part about, you know, the animals and the tiger and Richard, you know, and all this stuff he has to go through. And then he's like, well, okay. You know, and so I'm like, and I struggled with this book in general. I thought it was very slow-paced, and I kind of didn't want to keep reading it. So I had fought through to get to that point where, yay, he's saved and everybody's happy. And he's like, oh, wait, it was really this. Just kidding. And so
you were in a snow globe.
Yes, yes. So that kind of was very frustrating for me. And so I kind of gave up at that. I mean, I finished the book, but I was just like, and I'm done.
Well, I could see how that could be emotionally. It'd be like, oh, it was just a dream.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
Great, yeah. Great. You yeah. know, that's like this very, like, you know, this, like, Deus Ex Machina that just kind of ruins the story. I could feel that.
When I was reading, I thought, he's hallucinating these animals, the orangutan, the zebra, the hyena, and then Richard Parker. So I kind of knew something was going to do a big turnaround at one point. I just didn't know it would be at the very end.
It would be that turn.
But I much prefer the story with the animals.
Just like the thing with the religions, I can hold both stories in my head at once. I'm totally okay with both. I'm just like neutral. Okay. I think it would have been a different book. You could have had this really like terrible, like hardcore survival story. Like trying to think who would make that movie, Clint. If that was like the survival movie where you got to see this like French cook kill your mother and then you kill the French cook.
Joe Carnahan.
Yeah, it's terrible. Joe Carnahan, dark sea thriller. I don't know who Joe Carnahan is. It's going to roll.
He did The Gray with Liam Neeson.
Yeah, that's a great movie to contrast, actually, because the kid gets along with the tiger pretty well, but Liam Neeson didn't get along with those wolves at all. But so, any thoughts about the book-to-movie adaptation, if those of us who saw the movie?
Interesting, I'll share a quote I found from Jan Martel. He says, I'm not sure how readers will react to it. I suspect they'll like it. The problem is they shouldn't compare, of course, because it would be like comparing two languages. So if you like the book, please check out the movie, and you know in some things you will be very pleased. So yeah, I feel like if the book is beloved to you, I think you'd mostly be okay with...
How close is it to the book?
There's... Of course, some, I guess, differences just for the melodrama. Like, for instance, they add in a girlfriend that he leaves before he goes on the journey. And there's no scene where the French cook is picking on the family.
They don't actually film that. They just show Pi talking. So they're really, like, gruesome, brutal, like, we're killing each other on the boat scenes. Like, it's just his talking head. It's not shown.
And one thing that stuck out to me, and it probably doesn't mean anything, but how Pi sort of embraced all these religions. Well, there's a scene in the book you might remember where they're sitting down to dinner, and Pi says, I want to be baptized, and I want a prayer rug. But in the movie, all he says is, I want to be baptized. So I don't know. Is that significant or not? Probably not.
Does kind of westernize it a little bit?
There are little things like that. I think the addition of the girlfriend was kind of weird. For one thing, her role was really small, so their character isn't really developed. But also, that aspect of life, I really feel like this book is kind of about like the essence of life, you know what I mean? And like finding God in nature and finding God when you're struggling at your lowest point. So like the aspect of love, like romantic love, which is not one of the things that's present in the book. But I guess if you make a big studio movie, you have to have the pretty girl in there for even for 5 minutes. Or even she doesn't have any dialogue, I guess.
Right.
Those are your preview scenes.
Yeah, I guess. I kind of felt like it was very close and true to the book, but they kind of softened it a little bit, I think, to make it more geared towards kids and families and to get that PG rating. Like there's a lot of survival scenes in there, really intense, sort of gross out. I'm eating live animals raw because I'm starving to death, and this is a moral conflict for me, and this is against my Hindu beliefs. You know, I'm a strict vegetarian, and this is gross and horrible, but I can't help myself. That's sort of all just sort of cut out, and also the very, very intense hallucinization scenes when he loses his vision, and then he. What is probably an hallucination where he talks to the French cook about why did you kill these people? Or maybe it was at first it seems like he's talking to Richard Parker, you're not sure. For me, those were the most intense, interesting parts of the book because they were so confusing and really made the reader think and work what was happening here. Those just got cut out. But I still think that it was true. I think those were really intense. I think that would be really hard to film. But I still think it was very true to the spirit of the book. And I think if you like the book, I think that you would like the movie. I think they did it really... There were a lot of times when Pi had, for lack of a better term, like, you know, intense spiritual moments, you know, when he thought he was going to die or overwhelmed by the beauty of the ocean. And I think they captured a few of those really well.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So the tiger CGI or...
Mike told me that it was all CGI.
That's what I heard.
The tiger was all CGI?
The entire time.
Are you serious? So I thought there was a few scenes that looked like a real tiger.
I mean, you can't really put a man on a lifeboat in the middle of the ocean with a real tiger crystal.
Remember what happened to, like, what?
Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude.
You know,
tigers are mean.
I thought they took one of those people from Circus Olay and did some motion capture stuff. No, I'm just kidding.
Tiger suit like Gollum?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know, you said that it was 80-20, 80% CGI real.
That's what I thought, but
could be wrong.
I mean...
That's what I heard.
We'll have to go back and research.
Put a note.
Listen, I'm just like the two versions of the story. The tiger could be real. Yeah,
both in
whatever, man.
Is it hallucination? Is it Andy Serkis on a boat?
Yeah, maybe.
Rower.
I'm just going to think back to, you know, Ang Lee did the Hulk movie, and that was basically considered like the bad Hulk movie. Everyone said the CGI was bad, and it was. This CGI, 10 times better. Wonderful. Tiger looked real.
And this was Ang Lee, right? He was the director of the movie? Yeah.
Can we just, like, before we leave, go back to the carnivorous island?
Yeah, so I was just going to say, what else we got to go? Let's cover everything else we didn't touch that we want to talk about.
Sure. So at the beginning I said when we get there, go back to that. But that scene in the book, and then it was pretty much the same in the movie, to me is what made me think that it was kind of leaning against organized religion, because that, you know, you had that island of meerkats and they were all together, and you know, it was supposed to be an oasis there, that island, but yet he found out he would have died had he stayed there. So did anything about that strike you, Amanda, when you were reading it? Or
I think my brain had already shut off by that point in the books.
That's right.
I was just trying to turn pages to get to the end at that point. Right. I'm like, are we done yet? Oh, okay.
Carnivorous plants, though. That sounds awesome.
You would think. Yeah. Well, and yet?
During the day, it's like a paradise. At night, the island will eat you, though.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's like Vampire Island.
Yeah, it's, cool. it's like Vampire Island, right? And but that is the one point where the book truly becomes totally unbelievable. Because
he wouldn't have meerkats on an island. So
what's one of the interesting things about the book is he does put in all this zoology. And one of the reasons that Pi is able to survive, because he actually really understands how to train the tiger. He understands how, to an extent that a human can, how it thinks, you know, how it operates and what to do, because he used to live at the zoo. You know, Pi himself used to live at the zoo with the tiger. And, of course, it's, you know, it's unbelievable, but it seems like it's very real when he talks about all the fish and the fish biology, the things you could eat on the fish and the survival guide. But then when you get to the magical floating island and there's meerkats there and, you know, you just realize that, oh, we're in Alice in Wonderland now. I mean, that's the only thing that I thought, because I always heard that there was a work of fantasy literature, and I didn't get that at all until we got to the floating island. So.
All right. Fair enough.
And it became obvious, right, that his brain was somewhere else. So...
Mine too.
Yes.
So, final thumbs up, thumbs down. What you got? I know what you think, so I'll let you go first.
Thumbs down.
Do you want to elaborate, or did you say it already?
Well, I remember everybody when it first came out in 2001, I think. And it was, oh, this is such a great book. You got to read this book. And it was one of those we had a huge wait list on, so I put myself on the list and I read it. And I just remember getting done and going, really? And I was just kind of like, no, thank you. So I didn't even go back and review it for this podcast because I'm like, it's no, thank you.
Thumbs up for me. I remember, this is funny, when it came out and I was seeing it on the shelves and people were talking about it. I said, I don't want to read that. That has to be about math with that title.
But anyway,
but I would probably never would have read it had Mr. Martell not be coming to town and we decided to discuss this. But overall, I enjoyed it. Once we got past all the zoo philosophy.
That's only at the beginning, and then those ideas, you know,
like
play
115 pages in, you finally get past whatever.
What page? You always hear it's about a kid on a boat with a right. tiger, and then it's like, you're always like, when is that going to, when are we going to get to that part yet?
Where's the tiger?
Yeah. Me, personally, I mean, on a personal level, this book didn't speak to me, right? I'm not religious. I'm not into big cats. I like my little house cat. That being said, I think there are a lot of ideas in this book, and I thought it read fast. I mean, I'm a slow reader. I mean, I thought it read fast. I think it'll be a good community read because there are so many ideas in it. And I think, too, ideally, I don't know if this will happen, but it would be great if it would start some interfaith dialogue in it here in Nashville, right? Hinduism, Islam, and Christianity have to be, I'm guessing.
I can't imagine. I don't know that we have a huge Hindu population in town. I mean, I know we do have a big Muslim population.
Well, we got enough people that we got the big temple out, like in Bellevue.
There's a Hindu temple?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, there is.
I was not aware of that.
Beautiful. It's like one of the most beautiful buildings. Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's awesome, yeah. So I'm guessing, just my hunch, right? So, I mean, awesome, it would be great, some interfaith dialogue. I think, too, that it's just a lot more positive view of religion. And I think, you know, the last Nashville Reads was actually, like, really kind of the religion gone bad. Yeah. Like, Margaret Atwood is really religion gone bad. So I think this is a lot more positive spin. And tell you what, just my professional opinion as a librarian doctor, I have, you know, been doing book clubs here at the library for a lot of years now, and I think this will be a good book to discuss, and I think it's a good choice. Even though for me, like I said, I'm not religious, and survival story doesn't speak to me. So, but I think it's a good choice for a community read. I did think of some read alikes. You know, I can't turn the librarian off. Ishmael by Danielle Quinn. That book came out maybe 10 years ago, maybe even more than that now. But
this one came out was 10 years ago, so.
Yeah, so it's more than that. So it's more than that. It was before that, maybe 20 years ago. So in Ishmael, it's about a guy sees an ad. There's a teacher that wants a pupil, like, in the back of a magazine, and he goes there, and it's a gorilla. And the gorilla speaks to him telepathically and says, I want to tell you a story. And it's a story about humanity, of how humanity used to be and how humanity got here. And then, of course, the person has sort of goes on this spiritual revelations about the nature of animals and everything. It's one of those books, too, I think like Life of Pi. Some people read it and are like, who cares? And then some people read it and are like, wow, this book was a spiritual revelation. You know, this book, you know, made me believe in something. Right. Yeah, it's the same. And the other book I think too that's really really similar to the Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway. Mm-hmm. I think the Old Man and the Marlin. There's a parallel between Pi and Richard Parker the Tagger. I can keep going. Ready to keep going?
You can close your librarian.
Yeah, that's fine. So if you want to hear me say these things over again, but in person, just kind of like kind of like an author talk. The second Wednesday book club will discuss Life of Pi March 13th at noon here at the library. And I facilitate that book club. So if you'd like to hear me say these things again in person, you could come to that. All right, Life of Pi. Other book-to-movie adaptations. Go.
Well, I got one here. Cloud Atlas came out last November, and I read the book maybe 5 or 6 years ago. The book is really amazing. It surprised me, because normally when it's shelved in this fiction section, I'm like, not so much. But this time, I thought I'd give it a shot. And it's six interlocking stories from different time periods, and they all kind of merge together. There's like one that's set in the Pacific. It's like an adventure kind of thing. There's like a memoir in Europe. About this guy who tries to get a mentor and hopes to become a better musician, I guess. There's one set in the 70s that's like an action thriller that's like, you know, guns a-blazing and stuff.
Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, or groovy. There's one that's set in the present that's like a comedy, which when I saw the movie, I completely forgot existed. I'm like, what is this? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Timothy Cavendish. Timothy Cavendish chapter.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. There's one that's a science fiction-y one that's set about like 200 years in the future. I think it was in like Neo-Soul, about a woman who's like grown in a vat, becomes a McDonald's surfer, basically, and how she becomes free and stuff. And there's one that's set in the far future. It's like a post-apocalyptic bit. And they all tie together, and they have reoccurring characters, and characters become reincarnated, and it's pretty neat. The movie I thought was good, but they changed it up because in the book, each story ends halfway through, and then it resumes later, which I thought was, and so you get to see how each story like references the one before that, and like one will say like how it ends, but you don't actually get to see how it ends until way later, which I thought was a neat touch that you don't really hear much. But in the movie, they're all at the same time, so if there's like certain bits that, certain events that happen within each story, you see them happen within each story at the same time, which
okay. They're like they cross cut.
Yeah, which is cool, but not as cool, I guess.
No, I mean, the structure of the book, it's like mirrors each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, chronologically through time. Like, you know, yeah, it was beautiful, amazing book.
Yeah. Yeah. The movie's a little long.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they could have cut out some things and still had the flow, but the movie's, like, three hours long or something. It's just like...
You know, they changed one thing, but we'll talk about it later.
Okay, that's fine. My memory of certain things in the book is kind of fuzzy.
Yeah, that I think really affects the like what the book's about. But I'll put it in the notes if you care, or ask in the comments, and I'll care. So, you know, anything else?
I think that's about it for that.
So, we're kind of short on time. Of course, we talked about Life of Pi forever. It's the book that makes you believe in God. You know, especially when the mayor tells you to read it. but just absolutely sure bet, like, awesome book, awesome movie, No Country for Old Men. No Country for Old Men by Cormac McCarthy came out in 2005. It's about, you know, this redneck that finds some Mexican drug dealer money and they want it back. And you think that this story has been told 100 times, it totally reinvents this genre. It's amazing. And then the Coen brothers did a film version a few years later. Won all kinds of Academy Awards, deservedly. You know, we talked about, are the Academy Awards relevant? Do they mean anything? I think No Country for Old Men deserves the awards that it got. And who was the cinematographer on that movie? You don't know?
Roger Deakins?
I thought.
That's what I'm throwing out there.
Just say it anyway. That's what I thought. That's what I wanted you to say, even if it wasn't. So, awesome. Sure bet.
Let me ask you about this, because... No Country for Old Men started as a screenplay and then was turned into a novel and then went back to being a screenplay. Do you think that?
Well, this is one of the things that, you know, after...
Because the book reads like a screenplay. I mean, if you read the book, you could film that.
Yes. I mean, I feel that. I still think it worked. It didn't take anything away from the book for me. I can't remember what I read or watched first, but I just remember, like, I love them both. I mean, I really love the book. It's one of those books that just, like, burn a hole in my heart. I just loved it. I mean, all that, the crazy redneck finds the money. It's all my crazy redneck uncles. I'm a redneck, so I'm allowed to say that. If you guys aren't rednecks, you're not allowed to use that word, but I'm allowed, right? So, but, you know, I love that character. I guess what I was going to say was, you know, being familiar with the Coen brothers' work, there were lines in there, and I was like, oh, that's not Coen brothers. Like, that's just, like, not something that they would write. And, like, sure enough, it was, like, direct. Right? I mean, the same dialogue was in the book.
See, I think with the Coen brothers, though, I mean, even with True Grit, they basically shot the book. I mean, if you read the book of True Grit, all that dialogue comes from the book.
You know, our copy of True Grit was missing today. So if you out there have that, thanks a lot, jerk. The library would like that back. Just saying. I'm sure we have more copies. Maybe. Possibly. Or maybe we don't have any. Okay. Grumpy. Grumpy librarian.
I saw a review of this book. It's a magazine somewhere. I thought, oh, that looks kind of cool. So I put a hold on it, and it just came in. It's called Dancers Among Us. It's by Jordan Matter. He's a photographer. And basically what it is this whole book. It's not really a coffee table book. It's kind of like a scaled-down coffee table book. It's probably 8 by 12. But it's photographs of dancers in everyday, like in a dancing position in everyday life. And they haven't used trampolines or wires or CG or anything. It's just dancers being dancers in the middle of, say, New York City or Baltimore. I was showing Crystal before we started, and she's like, wow, that's really cool. I'm like, I know, right? So if you need a little bit of joy, there are some, like, there's a little bit of a story kind of woven through, and there's excellent quotes on each page. But if you just kind of need something to look at and say, wow, that's really sweet, And to make you happy, check out Dancers Among Us. Brian's going to punch me now.
Why?
Because you're grouchy.
I was not going to bring this up.
He's always grouchy. I know.
He needs to read this book.
Angry Dancing.
I'm grumpy with the person that misplaced the copy of True Grit by Charles Norwood.
Portis.
Who wrote a novel called Norwood.
There you go.
That's why. Okay. But, you know, I'm grumpy with that person. But I'm just going to put a theory out here. There's secretly a grumpy person in the podcast, and I think that it is Amanda.
It's Amanda?
I do think so. Because
tables have been turned.
No, but I have a happy book.
Happy book, but this is my theory.
Okay.
You didn't like Life of Pi.
I didn't. I really didn't.
Okay. And then we talked about, the last time we were here, we talked about movies and movies we liked and cinematography and movies that are good, movies that are bad. And then you posted on the Off the Shelf blog a review that was like, I don't give a librarian's hole about movies that are good or bad. I like this scene. And I was like, you know what? That's kind of snarky.
And I read that. I did think that.
So what was the name of the movie?
Pitch Perfect.
Pitch Perfect, right? And
it's very much like Glee.
You could read her review. And I thought to myself, this is everything she wanted to say during the Oscar podcast that she didn't say.
Pitch Perfect wasn't nominated, so I couldn't say.
So I was like, somewhat secretly grumpy. I play the role of public grump, but there's someone that's...
I'm a closet grump.
Closet grump. That's what... Anyway.
So then I read this book, though, and now I'm happy again.
That's awesome.
So, Dancers Among Us.
I would totally look at pictures in that book.
It's an interesting book, actually.
It is a picture book, too, so for those of you that don't read, I mean, you're talking like maybe one word every other page.
I've never read any of these books we've ever talked about on the show.
That's why you like Life of Pi.
Wow.
Totally.
True character is coming out.
Yeah.
So, what do you got?
I'm Crystal and I like everything. I'm just going to say real quickly because I want to give Mike time to tickle the fancy. But Amanda Palmer and Grand Theft Orchestra Theater is Evil. You might remember it from last year because she raised $1.2 million on Kickstarter to kind of fund this. It's a great record, y'all. You need to check it out. 15 tracks. There's a video that she just posted this week of one of the songs called The Bed Song that will really kind of turn your brain around a couple circles. So
is she the one that's married to Neil Gaiman?
Yes, she's Mrs. Neil Gaiman.
I thought he
knows
that name.
I thought he was Mrs. Amanda.
Yeah, probably the other way around.
He would probably claim that.
What you got, Mike?
Well, I recently joined the book club group for Sword and Laser, which has a podcast and a video show on YouTube. And today, this month's book was Bridge of Birds, a novel of a China that never was by Barry Hughart. I don't know. It's almost like a Sherlock Holmesy story set in medieval China. It's also got some fantasy elements, goddesses.
So you mean like SF elements? Is that what you mean by fantasy?
Fantasy elements?
Like SF, like speculative fiction elements?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. It surprised me. It's written like a fairy tale. Some of the people in the book group said that it was kind of hard to get into, but I enjoyed it immensely throughout, and
Was Amanda in that group?
No, I'm not cool enough.
Can't join that free group.
Nope.
And one of my favorite bits about it is that a lot of the characters had goofy names. Like the two main characters is Number 10 Ox because he's the 10th son and he's really big. One of the characters one of the girls is named Bone Helmet.
That's a cool name.
One of the major characters is named Miser Shen, which, you know, cool nicknames, part of the Chinese mythology thing. Anyway. So
I dig it. But we don't own that book. You'd have to interlibrary loan that book.
That's right. You had to use the magic of ILL.
It is magic, people. I'm telling you.
Yeah. But then you also said there was a podcast and an online book group called
Swords and Laser. Rangers. It's very cool.
Yeah, that's an awesome name.
Yeah, every month they have a sword book, which is a fancy book, or a laser book, which is sci-fi book. Okay. They alternate. It's pretty neat. Okay. Last month's was a laser book. It was really good.
So did they have one with a sword and a laser that would, like, blow your mind?
Because there aren't books like that.
I just joined, so I don't know.
Oh, so something to look forward to.
Yeah, or a sword laser like a...
I dig it. Tickling My Fancy is a film podcast called The Film Talk. It's two gentlemen, Joe Lett, who's a photographer, and Jet Lowe, who's a photographer and a sound guy in Hollywood, and Gareth Higgins, who's an Irish author, and they watch movies that come out, popular Hollywood movies and independent movies, and they talk about it. It's awesome. I actually kind of am afraid that you would listen to that and be like, oh, look, these guys are really smart and professional, and the library podcast are a bunch of librarian holes blowing off steam. But I tell you what, I listened to our film expert Bill talk the last podcast, and then I listened to these guys talk about the Oscars and the movies in the Oscars, and I tell you what, I was a smarter person. It was really cool to hear what Bill had to say compared to what these guys had to say. You know, they agreed about some things, they disagreed about some things. It was really good. These guys are really, really smart, but that's also really funny. Like, the intro, like, their theme music is just them fighting about about movies. You know, they rarely agree. It was really cool. And what were you going to say something about?
Well, I just wanted to proxy for Bill here for a second. So last month we caught a little bit of flack because we talked about all the Oscar movies and nobody had seen any of them. So I would like to report that I'm still holding down the haven't seen any of them team. But I talked to Bill. He has since seen all of them.
Except for Life of Pi.
I don't know about, But his picks, he wanted me to tell you, his picks did not change. Like, he still stands by Zero Dark Thirty as the all-time best movie of this Oscar season.
And the guys on the Film Talk hated that movie. I just, you know, the only really one that I saw was Beasts of the Southern Wild. And so I just picked any category that was nominated in, you know, I just...
You saw more than I did.
Picked that category.
I've seen 7 out of 10.
Does that count? Yeah, you get. That's why I needed you to be on the podcast. Bill didn't see Life of Pi. That's why he's not here. He chickened out.
His tiger scared him.
Chickened out. Didn't want the mayor to be mad at him for not reading the book.
He's in hiding.
Didn't want the publisher, you know, bought all these books for us and he didn't read it. Man.
He still has 5 days until, or 7 days, or. Minus 2 days till Jan Martel comes.
He could come to my book club after that.
There you go.
Listen to the audiobook. Take a long trip.
Yeah. Hey, for more information, go to... Who's paying attention? Go to...
www.library.nashville.org.